Death, Taxes, and Toronto FC. It's That's So MLS with me, Andrew Bates. With me is Nick Thornton.
Hello.
How was, you've just been to the Whitecaps RSL game last night. How was that?
Overall, it was good. We came out with the result we needed, but it was kind of a weird match. The Whitecaps looked like they were going to win for the most part, for most of the game, but just gave up two really bad goals that were kind of unnecessary. But that's kind of been our season, where we're scoring goals by committee, and as long as we score more than our opponents, then we win the game, which I believe is the objective of these sports ball games.
Yes, at the end of the day, they do... Everything is boiled down to that one number at the end of the day, isn't it? So I was thinking we might talk about this week the Toronto FC clinched.
Yep.
We also got the NASL is not getting its second division sanctioning, which is a problem.
Oh. Wait.
Yeah, U.S. Soccer pulled the sanctioning for the NASL, or is not going to grant it second division status, which is a problem for FC Edmonton.
Right.
And there are a number of, I have a thought on this list of stadiums applying for the World Cup, and then there's been a bunch of results around the league. Rough week for New York City FC.
Rough week for New York City FC, indeed.
Neither New York team had a great time, but, I mean, at least Red Bull's got a point.
Yeah, no, and I mean, it's hard because part of me just wants to be brutally unfair to New York City FC and call out the fact that they're kind of a one-player team. Obviously, they've changed since their expansion year, and they've brought in more talent, and they've got some youth on their side. They've got other players who can step up. But to me, there was a play last night in the New York City-Portland game that sort of summed up where New York City is at right now, that if they don't correct, they could be in trouble. I mean, it seems like they'll be able to, if they crank out enough results, that they'll be able to maintain a playoff spot. You know, 50 points, one would hope that's enough to secure you a berth.
Right.
But, you know, you never know. But it seems likely they'll make it through. But if they're going to continue with any sort of success in the playoffs, you know, there's a play, I forget in which minute it was, but Perlo's holding up the ball in his end. And Maddox just comes up behind him, dinks the ball out from underneath. Perlo's arms go up, trying to call for a foul, because Maddox kind of had his back against him and is, you know, positioning his body properly. And then, of course, Maddox passes into Valeri, and Valeri does what Valeri does.
Right.
And the fact that all the New York City FC players just sort of stopped and were, like, watching the play develop. And for Pirlo to just, like, his instinct was to call for a foul when, and he just stands there, makes no effort to win the ball back. Granted, maybe that's not his role in the team. It was just, it sort of was one of those things that seemed emblematic of, like, when European stars come to MLS to retire. And, you know, Pirlo is an amazing player on any night, but I think that was just such a good example of how a player... Sometimes those European players expect different things about how they're going to be treated. And I actually sort of thought, you know, well done to Darren Maddox to just... Pirlo got caught sleeping. He came in, stole the ball, made it simple for Valeri to crank it into the net. And, you know, New York City FC had their chances. Arguably, they also had the save of the year, Johnston, with that just incredible flying back, like, back of his hand. I still don't really understand the physics of how he kept that ball out, but...
That was crazy.
That was also, like, the best of probably four really amazing saves.
That was, like, a pass back in the box to from Blanco to Valeri, if I recall.
Yeah, yeah. And I, like, I'm sure Valeri went over to him afterwards and shook his hand, because there was numerous chances that were denied by Johnston. So, yeah, you certainly see New York City's quality shining through, but I don't. Do you have any thoughts on the game? I sort of found it a little underwhelming, to be honest. But I guess I just feel that way when I see football played on a baseball pitch.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, that's true. Stretching back to this KC game, it looked like on a rainy Wednesday at Kansas State or at Yankee Stadium, it looked like they were playing in front of about 12 people. But yeah. Maybe that's just a trick of the camera angles or something. You're right that I think it kind of speaks to New York City FC's unsuitability as a contender, because this is, even though they have 50 points, they're in second, unless it's possible that they could be passed by Chicago, but their role is pretty carved out right now in the conference.
Mm-hmm.
And this type of matchup is what you would want in terms of being able to, you could see this as a potential MLS Cup matchup because of their table positioning.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really seem like New York City has a lot of the tank in those situations. Like, it has to be proving itself in games like these.
No, and I mean, as much as I'm going to be biased towards the Western Conference, and as much as talk as there's been about the Eastern Conference strengthening this mm-hmm. year, if you take the top six teams right now, and I'm going to go from sixth up, and you just, first thing that pops into your head, and you're probably biased too, but if you think they could beat any of the top three in the West. So number six is Atlanta United.
Yeah, I don't think, it's right now Whitecaps are third. And as much as I don't want to be biased, it's almost as though my bias is like a lack of confidence, because I'm like,
yeah.
Well, true. Maybe I don't want to
talk anything when we're talking about the Whitecaps.
Right. Great to have the Cascadia 1-2-3. But it's true. You're right. Atlanta, New York, Columbus. You have to get to Chicago, which was able to prove its mettle in that situation with Vancouver.
Yeah,
absolutely. Until you get somebody that can do it. In yeah. Sporting Kansas City, that was the one thing. As much as it's been a rough week for New York City, it was a great result for Kansas City on the road.
Yeah, and you know, and now that they're coming into their own, I think part of it too is that the form of some of the Eastern clubs is starting to drop off, with the obvious exception of Toronto. New York City FC, Chicago, Columbus has had some decent results recently. New York Red Bulls are starting to climb a little bit, but they've got 41 points. They've got a ways to climb. And, you know, New England is in form. It's not inconceivable that New England could steal that sixth playoff spot. Obviously, Atlanta's got to play today, their first game in their new stadium. So you sense that there's going to be a lot of movement in both conferences. But right now, as it stands, when I look at those teams, I go, any one of those, with the exception of Toronto, I think could be pretty easily dispatched by at least the top four clubs. And yeah. Now that Cascadia has kind of secured the West in the top three spots, I go, like, you know, you're right, Vancouver's probably the outlier there, but Seattle or Portland, I would favor them over New York City, even Chicago and Columbus any day. So maybe we should talk about Chicago, because they had kind of an interesting result at home.
I didn't get a chance to check that those highlights. What happened?
Well, so it came out 1-1 in the end. I unfortunately watched most of the game, and New York Red Bulls are a frustrating team to watch on the road, because they really just try to funnel everything through Wright Phillips, which, I mean, of course, that's what they're going to do most times, but they really just kind of sit back, defend with eight men and wait for their opportunity to counter, which evidently worked out quite well for them.
Mm-hmm.
The sort of alarming thing to see is, I mean, it was sort of a tale of two Chicagos, because Nikolic finally got his first goal since, I believe, like July 1st or something, which I found really hard to believe, but he hasn't scored since July. So he finally got his goal. But the rest of the team just didn't seem to show up, and you see how crucial Schweinsteiger is to them, not necessarily in terms of creating plays, but they play very differently without him. And not just in terms of the setup, but the confidence of the players. Chicago at home, earlier, you know, a few months ago, you would have favored them any day to just easily dispatch the Red Bulls. The Red Bulls aren't, they're not a great team on the road. They have struggled until recent times. And, whoa, it was a frustrating match to watch because neither team could really hold on to the ball for very long. But the chances being created just weren't very good. It all sort of seemed like a bit of a half-hearted effort in both final thirds.
Right.
And so it was interesting that you've got a match where, you know, the Red Bulls are looking to climb up the table, Chicago's looking to climb up the table, and both teams didn't really come out guns blazing and walk away with a point each. Which becomes really interesting when you think about the New Englands and the Atlantas. Obviously, Atlanta still has to play today, but, you know, you sense a bit of, like, there's some teams in the East that are starting to knock at the door in ways that I don't think they have in past years, where the top six teams kind of have it secured by this point, or close to.
Right.
But it was a pretty underwhelming match.
That makes sense. Now, where was Schweinsteiger?
I think they were resting him. I think he had a bit of a hamstring thing or something, like a knock, as they would say.
Yes.
But that also says a lot that if they're not able to have him in every single playoff game, like if they're going to have to rest him, right now it's kind of like. And I know they've won games without him this season, but clearly, again, just for the confidence of the other players, he makes everybody else on that team better.
Yeah.
By the fact that he's even at the club. But when he's on the bench or watching in the stands and they know he's not an option, they seem to really lose some of that confidence. And I think one thing you could say that's true of Chicago, and it's not to take away from their success this year, is that they're sort of a sneaky team in that they play better than they actually are because they've got somebody like Schweinsteiger on their side. Because when you leave it up to, you know, and on paper it should work. You've got McCarty, you've got Akam, you've got Nikolic, you've got all these players on the field who should be able to just get the job done. But they don't seem to have the confidence in themselves to do it. And in a playoff situation, like for me, there's no doubt they get into the playoffs. However, even within the East, I think there's teams that in a playoff situation will rise to the occasion and be able to do away with them without too much trouble.
That makes sense. They're in the, if they stick around in third, they kind of get the nice situation of facing whoever scraps it out for that last place, be it Atlanta or Montreal or New England. But you could see that, especially the one caveat I would give to that is that I've seen in games it doesn't necessarily work when you try to neutralize Schweinsteiger on the pitch, because I think that I've seen games as well when teams will focus on him more, but give other players more space to operate.
Yeah, and I think that's where our comments have a lot of success, right? Is you've got a pacey young forward who, if you've got three players crowding out Schweinsteiger, that doesn't mean he can't still release a great pass and chip it over the top or put a nice through ball through some defenders and have somebody else pounce on it. And
yeah.
Again, that's where a player like that can just, it takes up a lot of real estate on the pitch because you've got to send at least two people to defend him.
Mm-hmm.
Which again gives your forward some room to operate.
So one team that had the opposite effect from their big star midfielder was Orlando, who did not start Kaká in 1-2-1.
Yeah. Which you would hope they could do against DC United. I wouldn't even say it was necessarily a comfortable victory, which I think says a lot about Orlando's form right now. But I have a certain affinity for Giles Barnes because he spent a year with us in the Whitecaps.
Right.
But I still feel like he's not quite given his credit that, he's not the most prolific scorer, but he had that chance last week that probably should have gone in and was just a little unlucky. And so credit to him and the rest of the team for sort of stepping up. But it's still, you know, watching that game and looking at the talent that Orlando has on the field, even without Kaká, you kind of just have to shake your head if you're like, how is this not a 4-0 game against DC United that's sitting at the bottom? It's a little baffling, but, you know, they're slowly, I mean, they're yo-yoing back and forth. I've forgotten where they're sitting right now.
I believe...
Ninth.
Oh, I had this up. Yeah.
With 34 points, depending on results, it's not impossible that they could make the playoffs, but you sort of, I don't know, maybe yesterday with people playing for places, I feel like Giles Barnes doesn't really want to switch clubs again at the end of the offseason.
No.
He does seem to take quite a while in the season to, like, perk up and go, I'm, like, getting paid by the club and I should probably, like, tune on here. But in a club like Orlando, you know, you're always going to be sort of playing second fiddle to some of the star power they have there. But yeah, a decent result. I sort of felt like yesterday was, if you're going to talk about a that's-so MLS situation, yesterday was sort of indicative of results, right? If, like, there was a few surprises, there was a few exactly what you would expect. There was, I think the first two matches that I watched, within 10 minutes, 3 goals had been called back because they were deemed to be offside or illegitimate in some way. So it was a very MLS week, I felt.
Yes. We had in the that late call in the Colorado-Houston game. Mm-hmm. Or no, I'm thinking of the Minnesota-Philadelphia draw.
Mm.
Where they almost called this penalty on Uguchi Onyewu, which would have totally changed the game because it was 1-1. They called a penalty on Gooch, as the U.S. Women's National Team fans know him, for handball, but he rightly kind of had the complaint that he had been pushed in the back. Mm. I don't know if he was arguing that being pushed in the back put him out of position, and that's why he put his hand on the ball, or whether or not the play just should have been dead when he got fouled. But that was, I'm sure, for Philadelphia supporters, that was a heart-in-mouth situation, I'm sure.
Yeah, I only saw the highlights of that one, but Minnesota looked like they had numerous chances. You know, they've been beaten at home this season, but they've got such incredible support, and there's just such a different energy about that team when they're playing at home that you kind of always feel like they're in it. And, you know, they'll be an interesting club because if they somehow squeak in to the playoffs, which seems a little doubtful, but...
Yeah,
could have. I can't even find them. Where are they? Oh, yeah, they're at 10th. They're not getting in, but... To me, that's almost kind of a shame because I'd love to see what a Minnesota that squeaks into the playoffs would do, because for me, I feel like they could win the home game or grind out a result, but the away legs possibly just get overrun. But it's exciting to see them kind of come into form a little bit more. They're being a little bit more patient and just a little bit more positive going forward. They seem to be giving up fewer goals, which I know they, considering the 8 or 9 they gave up in their first two games, is if that's the bar. But Yeah, and I think they're kind of quietly building something. It'll be interesting to see kind of where they do finally end up and what kind of moves they make in the offseason.
It's true. I think that they are definitely one or two. They give off the look of a team that's one or two years away from really clicking in a positive way. Those end zone, those University of Minnesota end zone paintings, though, awful.
That is a fair criticism. One of the sort of surprise results. Well, I don't know. Do you think it's a surprise result that Colorado came away with 3 points in Houston?
Yeah, I definitely think this is kind of to the point that we've talked before about Colorado really underplaying their hand in underachieving for what they could do. Like it doesn't seem they've always had the tools to be able to do this, but they so rarely have put them together. I mean, mm-hmm. I think this was their first. If that happened away, I think it's their first away win. That's right. It's their only away win of this whole season. Hmm. So that is a surprise. But
and as spotty as Houston's been, their home stadium, I sort of thought, was a bit of a fortress.
Hmm.
And the thing about that game, too, is that the number of chances that Colorado had, still definite moments of very Colorado-ness play.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sort of baffling that a team like Houston that has such a positive attack and so much speed against arguably one of the worst defenses in the league couldn't put anything past Tim Howard. And I mean, he wasn't too troubled by any of the saves he had to make. It was just sort of a Houston not being on the same page thing. But for Colorado, I mean, Badji, I think, had like 3 or 4 chances that if there's a surprising thing of the game, it's that Colorado probably could have scored 1 or 2 more.
Yeah, it looked like they had a lot of pressure. That first half free kick on the byline really could have... on the goal line, really could have created something. It seemed like that whole first half was really just a lot of fizzle because Kubo Torres couldn't make it happen either. He had this nice little... I saw that he had this chance that he tried to get, but he couldn't quite turn it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. I think that that's what is... Even though it is a shock... Colorado had the pressure for the whole game.
Yeah, and that, you know, perhaps shifting gears to the Canadian side of things, I mean, what Carl Robinson said about Real Salt Lake, I think, is also true of Colorado, is that they've got nothing to lose, so they're dangerous, because they can experiment with plays, they can experiment with formations, they can go out and just, you know, most people right now are playing for their contracts next season, and...
Right.
As we've seen in MLS, that can be a very potent combination. Now, Colorado's not going to make some dream run like Seattle did last year and storm the playoffs, but they could easily be taking points off of people who are trying to climb up the table, and they did against Houston, right? Like, Houston really could have used 3 points and came away with nothing.
Yes.
At home. And to me, that's just such a giant middle finger from Colorado to be just like, yeah, you think we suck? We're the worst? Okay, we'll show you how bad we are. And come in and take 3 points in Houston. It's just sort of, it honestly put a bit of a smile on my face where I was like, you know, I always want to root for the underdog. So I was like, you know, well done. Hairston, who's had a all over the map season, you know, he made mistakes, but he, you know, as a defender, he's up there putting in through balls into the box. Like, he's sort of becoming, at least in this game, the player that everybody's been talking about is this kind of potential rising star. It's just all about form for them.
I think what's interesting when you look at the West right now, we were talking about this as just a sign of the quality. Is it Salt Lake... Salt Lake in 8th is closer to 1st than it is to 11th. With the amount of points, it's like 9 points versus 10 points between it and Colorado.
Yeah.
But I also like that the foot of the table is 1 point separating LA, Minnesota, and Colorado. So there is no promotion relegation.
No.
But there is still something to play for in terms of not being last.
Absolutely. And, I mean, I feel like for LA Galaxy, it's a bigger point of pride, and they also know Bruce Arena does not suffer fools, and he will. There's going to be a big shift in players, I think, in LA's offseason, so they know the job they have to do.
Arena's long gone, I think.
What's that? Sorry. God. Ziggy Schmidt. I'm getting my large personality coaches mixed up. I know that Bruce Arena is no. I meant Ziggy Schmidt. I was picturing Ziggy Schmidt.
Right.
I feel like you're good at calling the VAR on me for mistaken identity. Signal the box. Who am I talking about? Ziggy Schmidt does not suffer fools. Probably more so than Bruce Arena, actually. And, you know, we know the big names he's going to probably keep in LA because they've spent so much money to get them. But I think they know the playoffs are a pretty far stretch for them because at this point they would need teams in the West to lose. Portland, Seattle, Vancouver, Kansas are all in form. And with Kansas and Vancouver, we also have games in hand. So I guess so does the LA, but...
When I look at the West right now, I think that the sort of molten core there is Houston, Dallas, San Jose, RSL, where there's... Between those four teams, there are there are two spots.
Yeah.
And 3 points.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't see... 5 points separate RSL and Kansas City, and I don't see Kansas City really giving up too much. Like,
with their defensive record.
No. So I think it's between those four teams, and it could be a real toss-up because as exciting as it was, I'm sure, for Colorado to record that win, you're absolutely right. Houston really could have used those points.
Mm-hmm.
And all three of them kind of need to get something. All four of them, I think need to get something going.
Absolutely. So we haven't really talked much about the Canadian teams so far. Do you want to start with the obvious and probably the quickest and easiest rundown, which is Toronto and San Jose?
Woo! Speaking of Western Conference teams that need to get something going. Yeah, I mean, it marches on. I think what's almost scary now, I didn't catch whether or not Giovinco left with an injury or just because he wasn't needed at halftime.
Even just that sentence, what does that tell you about Toronto right now? And I'm choking on the words as they're coming out, but they're so good. Not just right now, but when... Look how well they did without Beta Shore, who came in last night with his first start in months, had, I believe, at least 2 assists. And yet they were able to slot in without him and do just fine. And that if Giovinco's not there or it's not his night, they can still score 4 goals.
Yeah.
Like, that's... Yeah.
So they took him off with quad tightness. So... which was apparently a precaution. So hopefully he doesn't get injured. But it does show that I think that was a real discussion last year, you know, when Giovinco got injured, like what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And the quality of Vasquez in Altidore really, really shone in this match.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Vasquez has had a fantastic season and he's barely put a foot wrong. But last night was such a perfect example of that. The scary thing to me is that, you know, what I saw of the game, Toronto looked like they were still kind of only in second gear. San Jose didn't really come out and do what they needed to do. Early on, it looked kind of even. I think everybody knew, like, I mean, nobody was going to go, oh, maybe San Jose will take 3 points here today. But
right,
the fact that Toronto so easily can put away 4 goals, yeah, I don't think, I don't know, is there much to add to it?
Well, I was also going to say that fresh off us talking about Osorio in his minutes last week.
Yeah.
He came on and he came on for Giovinco and got that goal. It was not, it was the fourth in a 4-0 game, so it doesn't exactly have that dramatic heft, but it was good to see more minutes and more goals from him.
And I think it's a statement from him, right?
Yes.
And
this is what
I think Toronto did a good thing in signing some big name players that would see them into a new era. Mm-hmm. But it's clear they also have a plan for post Giovinco life. I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon. But again, the fact that they can take him off and, you know, they don't all of a sudden get shaky, they don't collapse. If anything, they kind of, I feel like that's spurring on some of those younger players. Or last week talked about Raheem Edwards, and like he's sort of quietly waiting in the wings for his chance. It's an exciting time to be a Toronto FC supporter.
What grabs me every time about Osorio when he scores is that it really seems to mean so much to him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that when you have players, I don't know if Osorio counts as a homegrown player or not. But I mean, I think that's something that kept Russell Tybert around for the longest time in Vancouver is the passion for the hometown team or, in this case, the Canadian team.
Yeah, and I mean, and that is great to see from those Canadian players, especially the ones at Canadian clubs, is that, you know, regardless of what their performance is like, you know that they're going to come out and perform at their highest level, or certainly try to. And as much as you said, you know, Osorio's goal is the fourth goal in a 4-0 game, he was celebrating like it was the game winner.
Yes.
And that's positive to see that, you know, he's tuned in, he's switched on, he's ready to go. The fact that you wouldn't think your default position if you're a sub, knowing that you're potentially coming on for Giovinco, you know, it would be easy enough to just be sitting there thinking like, okay, I'm probably not going to see many minutes. Maybe I play the final 5 minutes or added time or whatever. But he came on and immediately had an impact, immediately was causing problems, and then gets his goal. That if Greg Vanney's just got to be rubbing his hands together after every match. Like he's... The purse overfloweth with players who can put the ball in the back of the net.
It's true. One thing we talked about last week, I think, the one that foolishly said there's not much chance of New England beating Montreal next week. Although I had the home away, I think I said it was going to be a road game for New England. They played at home. So,
yeah.
So there is that. But very impressive from them. They hit the crossbar like a billion times.
Yeah. Oh, that one, I forget who put the first ball in, and then Kamara just lashed at it and hit it again off the crossbar. And you're just like, oh my God. An MLS run of play if there ever was one. But yeah, they're an interesting team, right? You know, 35 points, they're sitting at 8th. Depending on results from, you know, again, Montreal still sits above them, but only by 1 point now. And Atlanta's tied with Montreal. If they can keep this run of form, they could go in and clinch that final playoff spot in the East. And they're certainly playing like that's their aim. They know the task ahead of them. But, you know, if Lee Wynn is in form and everybody else is paying attention and helping him out... yeah, again, I just feel like there's such an underrated team in MLS, not just because of their record, but because of their performances this year is they've lost a lot of games and they've given up points and they've given up bad goals, but they're a good team. And
that's true. Yeah, well, they went from like 10th when we were in our first week there to being in the conversation. So,
yeah. And even I know Montreal was missing a couple of guys and maybe didn't have their strongest lineup to fight on the road. If you're sitting at where Montreal's sitting in the table, you've got to think they've got to come out and get those 3 points. They could have won that game. And it wasn't just like not coming off for them. It wasn't, they just didn't play to the level they needed to.
Yeah.
And that's got to be kind of alarming.
I was a little alarmed by the challenge on the goal. Lee Nguyen kept his feet. But there was the Victor Cabrera's challenge on him was very clunky.
Yeah.
If he hadn't scored it, if he had lost his balance or if he hadn't scored, you could almost argue that it was a penalty in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Can't be doing that.
No. So the East continues to be an interesting subject. I have one note I want to make about the Vancouver game. I don't think it was a particularly surprising result, but a result they needed to get.
Mm-hmm.
I think both teams had a bye week, so both teams were coming in rested.
Yeah.
Davies.
What happened to Davies? What's going on with him?
Oh, he was there. He came on, I'm going to get this wrong, but I believe in about the 80th minute or so, around there.
Right.
And proceeded to stink up the pitch for the entire time he was on. I have not seen such a dismal performance from a Whitecaps substitute this season. And, like, it was one of those things. He comes on to enormous applause. The whole stadium is on their feet. And, of course, he's Alphonso Davies, so he gets a good couple of runs at defenders and sneaks past them. But also playing very much like a 16-year-old, hogging the ball to himself, head's not up, he doesn't see the players that are open, cheaply gives away possession, was getting muscled off the ball all over the place. And, you know, an RSL is a gritty team. Their defenders are going to throw some shoulders and could out-muscle you. But it did not look good. I think you could easily make the argument he's just come back from international duty. But
right.
I imagine Carl Robinson has some interesting decisions to make now about the Wednesday game and the upcoming Saturday game, because he didn't even necessarily look tired. He had the speed in his step, but he was all over the place. It was like watching a baby giraffe in cleats. He really, really unpolished and really poor performance from the kid.
I think that every once in a while, a game like that is necessary to let a young player know that they're not the shit.
Yeah, I agree.
Like you said, it's people expect great things when they see, and this is almost as much as the minute managing is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
It almost is a little bit. You almost create expectations by bringing him on late in close situations. Because everybody thinks, okay, well, if I'm only going to get 10 minutes, then hopefully they're going to be 10 great minutes.
Yeah, and they really do. And I was looking at Hurtado, because I think at one point he'd sort of started to change and then sort of put his penny back on, and then Davies went up. And I'm sure Hurtado probably last night was thinking, shit, well, I could have done that. And the thing that Hurtado brings is we know the kid can get the ball into the box and to key players. And again, a diamond in the rough, but we know he sees the players around him. And that for me last night was a big wake up call for Alphonso Davies of like, he's got to play with his team and stop trying to do everything himself. He wants those MLS goals, right?
But
one instance where Beckerman's closed him down, there's nothing on, and Davies just rifles it, and it comes off of Beckerman's ass, and then Beckerman just sort of like kicks it away, and you're just like, why are, like, Beckerman's going to close you down every time. Like, why are you trying to take a shot from this angle when you're closed down and you've got two other players who are open at the top of the 18-yard box? And it was just, and that kind of happened like again and again and again. And I was sort of thinking about this on the walk home, is like, if Alphonso Davies had started, I'm not sure he would have survived the halftime whistle. I think he would have been pulled off because he just looked really out of sorts and just not concentrating.
It's possible maybe that red card against Canada put him in a funk. If that is true, I think he has a rope to be in a little bit of a funk. He has a little space for that. Because this is where a player that has always looked mature also needs a little bit of life experience too. So if if this is the start of a little rough period that is instructive, I'm not against that.
No, neither am I. Particularly. I don't think it's going to be something that mars his whole career because he came on and had a crap few minutes as a substitute. But I think it is important for him, for the fans, for the manager, for everyone to remember, right, this is a student of the game who's very, very young into his career and is going to make mistakes. And there's development that needs to happen there, both on the kid's part, but also from the team to be able to come in and now support him and say, okay, like, you know, that's not the level you need to be at against an RSL team that was knocking at the door till the very end. One note about the games going on today.
Yes.
Which might shake things up a little. We've got Atlanta and DC playing. Atlanta in their new stadium. DC a little bit out of form. I'm going to just go ahead and call it. I think Atlanta, just out of pride, should and will win this game. Columbus and Sporting KC, flip a coin, I feel like. KC's been in good form, but so is Columbus. The interesting game to me today, which will be the Seattle LA Galaxy game, because as much as most of me just wants to be like, clearly Seattle will win this game. LA, again, the wounded cornered animal, and with some beginning to be decent performances, I kind of wondered, what do things look like if Seattle only comes out with a point there?
Yeah, and especially because Portland were able to get that result on the road in New York. It's the Siggy Bowl as well. So I'm sure that will be. You were saying earlier that this is not a manager that suffers fools, and I'm sure that this is. If players are playing for positions, that this will be a result that's dear to his heart.
He'll have something to prove. It is in Seattle, which hasn't been quite a fortress, but is always going to be a tough game. But again, it's not an environment Ziggy Schmidt's going to feel intimidated about walking into.
Yes.
And because of his shrewdness as a manager, you've got to think he's been looking forward to this, and this has been circled in his calendar since he got the job.
Yeah.
And there's a lot for the team to prove. There's a lot for him to prove. That's where I go. On paper, Seattle wins this easily. In reality, what happens? This is the game I'll be watching today for sure to see what happens. And it could just be one of those things where it ends up being nil-nil because of nerves or whatever. But I'm expecting this will be a pretty gritty match. And if not... a close result for either team, one with some cards and some discussion.
I would no doubt. So the second division is having some issues.
Yes, tell me more about this, because I haven't been following it. I know the plot points, but I don't have these updates. So what's going on there?
So the difference has always been between, as far as I've been able to perceive it, between the NASL and USL Pro as kind of like ambition versus more measured, an idea of more measured growth,
mm-hmm.
which is why USL Pro started as a third division league. And I believe last year they had the unique situation of putting them both as Division Two.
Right, yeah.
They were able to sort of, you know, lay out a roadmap, the NASL was, for sticking around despite the fact that they had lost Minnesota to the MLS, and they had lost a couple of teams, including the Ottawa Fury, to USL. But it's a big shocker, I think. I don't think a lot of... As much as it's borne out by sort of what has happened so far for them,
mm-hmm.
New York, the Cosmos almost fell apart in the offseason to the point where, the team staff and the team's offices were, like, moving out.
Right.
Like it was almost the end. And they don't really have, they didn't at that time have enough clubs. I think that's part of the issue, is that there are, I think, six now, and they're trying to do expansion. But without Division II status, unless the U.S. Soccer hacks together another kind of compromise, as they did a couple years ago with running a combined Division II league between the two, warring halves, it's going to be real rough for NASL to be dropped down to third division status, and it's going to be rough for FC Edmonton.
Yeah, and this is where North American soccer really kind of baffles me, and I can see how the reputation of England's soccer is so world-renowned, because when you've got, was it like 900 teams in a very sort of succinct pyramid of order, and then North America, honestly, it's only been recently that I've even kind of been like, oh yeah, I guess the NASL is a thing, but there's eight teams, like, why is this so confusing, and why is it so hard to get a system in place? I mean, Don Garber has said all along the idea of promotion relegation is a bit of a non-starter. There doesn't seem to be any interest from MLS to create a promotion relegation system.
Right.
But I would kind of have to agree with them right now, because you go, there's no structure in place to support it.
Mm-hmm. Well, the history, second division-wise, going back to sort of the last Whitecap season, is that the unified second division used to be USL 1, which is where Seattle and Portland and Vancouver all played. And then kind of in that last year, I can't remember if Seattle did play in the NASL, but that last year there was a sort of a mass exodus of these sort of top tier teams that wanted a chance to sort of be out of the USL system and have a little more freedom in terms of how they built their teams, is kind of how I understood it. 'Cause that's what NASL tried to do, sort of, and was embodied through the Cosmos, was the idea of, well, MLS is one product that has its single entity structure and has a salary cap.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to be the alternative. We are going to have an open system, a more open system, and teams are going to be able to spend what they want and try to establish themselves, not even just as a second division, but as an alternative product to MLS, which almost fell apart. And it's kind of falling apart now. It seems as though we're probably steering back towards a reunion of the sides, because the NASL can't work in its vision, I think, as a third division league.
No, and I mean, in USL, I know there's a few teams that, as well as NASL, there's a few teams that have been vying for MLS spots. I think the Tampa Bay Rowdies, mm-hmm. North Carolina, I believe, was also trying to put in a bid. Miami FC, of course, which seems all but a done deal now.
Well, I had heard that the Miami team is not going to be the NASL team.
Oh, I mean for MLS.
Yeah. No, oh. I mean, I think that the expansion, the Miami expansion franchise is not going to be Miami FC.
Gotcha. Yes. Sorry. Now I understand.
Which is rough for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like you finally get what you want, and then it's like, no, it's actually just going to be Beckham's team. You guys are still going to be playing in NASL.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I don't know what the solution is. I don't know that USL pursuing this kind of like secondary market option is really the best thing for most teams. I don't know how sustainable that is. There are teams within USL that have a very good following. Mm. But the reality is, so long as you have teams named Vancouver Whitecaps 2, Toronto FC 2, it's seen as the farm teams. It's seen as the lower division. And so they're always, I think, going to struggle to bring in much support and much revenue. And I also get it. It's hard, right? Like, you need a place to play. And I just think, you know, when you watch USL games and you see some of the pitches they're playing on, where it almost sort of feels like they've just found a pitch behind a parking lot to have a little pickup game, and that there doesn't seem to be the same commitment to these clubs, right? Like, they're, you know, aside from FC Cincinnati's, who clearly are investing, but to make an MLS bid.
Yeah.
It seems like the LAs, the Torontos, the Vancouvers, Montreals are using these as the step between Academy and MLS, and they don't really care where they end up. They're not trying to put on a show. They're not trying to put bums in seats. They're trying to create a vehicle for players like Alphonso Davies coming through to MLS. You don't get the sense that the Whitecaps organization is too perturbed by the fact that last year they made it to the final, and this year they're almost rock bottom.
Yeah.
It's sort of like a shrug of like, oh, whatever. You know, are you still producing products that could come through to the MLS? Great.
Mm. The issue between these two leagues, I think, is really quantified by the Ottawa Fury, who went off to USL. You're right about having these second division teams is a problem and looks, it doesn't look great. Like, it's just not a good look.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, part of the reason why the Fury chose to move from NASL to USL and get the Montreal connection, they have the sort of set, minor league affiliation now, is that the resourcing is just easier.
Yeah,
you know, like as much as it's not ambitious, at the same time, you know, being able to collect a little bit of the residual money flowing off of the MLS is really worked for a lot of teams.
Absolutely, and you know, the next time you're in Vancouver, you're out here, we're going to have to take you up to the Whitecaps training facility, because you got to think, like, yeah, why not have a USL side? How much is it really costing the Whitecaps organization to have it? And now they're training at a European class facility.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that they would not be able to do if they were, you know, owned by Gregor Robertson and just trying to, like, be a powerhouse in USL.
Mm-hmm.
But because of that, I think it's going to be very hard to attract much of a market to it without promotion relegation. But from the MLS side, I go, like, why would you put it in? Why would you have these MLS clubs that are paying so much money to be a part of this league even open to the idea of teams coming up that aren't really taking it seriously. And also ending up with potential situations where Whitecaps get relegated and Whitecaps 2 get promoted.
I think that this is a larger conversation, but I would say that my ideal scenario is closed for Orel, where it's like, if you want to keep adding MLS teams and everybody wants to be an MLS team, if you maybe got to 30 and did a 20-team first division and a 10-team second division or something, that I think is what you'd be most interested, would be most interesting from the MLS side. I think there are still a lot of barriers for it happening, but I think whatever happens, you would want to have more control over those brands, and so I think closed is the system that would work best for them if they wanted to do it, which I don't think they do.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, side question is, do we know how many teams MLS wants to eventually have? Because I sort of feel like it's this never-ending project of adding teams where is it just going to be like the top 20 teams make it into the playoffs and the bottom 20 don't? Like, where does this end for MLS?
28, I think.
Is
the goal.
Okay.
That's a quick look here. Makes it seem like that is where, because they're looking.
And we're at 24 right now? 22?
22. 22, not counting the Miami franchise in the
LA?
In LA 2.
Right.
This is just, that number comes from a piece I just pulled up, so I'm not 100% sure. But I think that's what they're looking for, is I think that that's the next set is going to be four. The next expansion is going to be a set of four teams.
Wow.
Not counting Miami.
Right.
So there's that. One thing that came up this week, it wasn't necessarily new, but I had a thought when I was looking at it. Was the official city bid list for the USA Mexico Canada World Cup bid.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, and it just speaks to the weird disparity between the global game and what individual countries need to be able to run their own shit. But the lack of MLS stadiums on this list really surprised me.
Yeah, it surprised me too. And I haven't been watching that closely because I don't know how viable it is to even consider this Canada-USA-Mexico bid. If you're FIFA, I think just looking into the travel costs, you would just be like, no, why not have it in Chile, Antarctica, and South Africa? Like, it's
the only other bid they could find was Morocco. I feel like it's happening.
Mm.
I feel like the North America one is happening. I mean, FIFA, I think, likes to have a second option just to put pressure on the host to not screw up.
That's fair. But yeah, I mean, the other thing is the quality of the stadiums. Like, I don't know. I guess I was just sort of thinking about Vancouver of like, can they repurpose BC Place and put in real turf? Or
that's like,
where the
point,
hell would
isn't
you
it?
Build a new stadium in Vancouver?
Well, I think that when you, I don't know if they are planning to build new stadiums for this, but the list that I'm looking at does name stadiums, and it does name BC Place.
Yeah.
In the 55,000 seat configuration.
Mm-hmm. But the pitch, is it acceptable?
I think there was a lawsuit about this, if I recall.
Yeah. When the women's team was playing.
Yes.
Which wouldn't that be great if the if we win and then BC Place decides they're going to put in real turf for the men? I think that that lawsuit might see some fresh legs.
I mean,
Regina was the head scratcher to me on that list. I mean, I would just love to be in the Regina airport watching France step off the plane to play in Regina.
The important thing to remember about this, with Regina, I think they've just had a couple of good international friendlies.
Yeah.
They brought in some club teams, and seen a little bit of success in terms of turnout. Is that this is going to be the first Monster 48 team World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems super unwieldy, but we are talking about a process that that we've never seen before anyway. If you have 48 teams, or if you have to have any sort of play-ins, or is there going to be kind of like a World Cup 2 division or whatever?
Like, you're not relegation putting within the World Cup qualifiers.
You're not putting France isn't going to Regina, but you know, some of the lower tier, maybe that's what they would do with some of the lower tier teams from Europe or Africa or something.
Sure. Well, and the reality is, like, how many matches would actually be played in that stadium, right? If it's spread out amongst all these different places, then you wonder. And certainly the U.S., we know, has some great facilities, as well as Mexico. BMO Field, to me, is obviously sort of the best Canadian pitch. But... yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, it'll be an interesting World Cup, regardless of where it is.
Yes.
Just for, as you mentioned, having 48 teams battling it out. Yeah, I mean, I guess you need a lot of stadiums for that.
I think that one of the things that was really hard is that I've talked before on the podcast about sort of the shift away from soccer-specific stadiums, which were sort of the gospel early on in MLS, where it was like, we've got to be playing in places that are not sort of cavernous. We've got to sort of shape our own intimate experiences, which I always thought was a great push and a great goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it says, if it's just sort of disappointing that, like, you build so much around MLS, and then as soon as it's time for the World Cup to come calling, it's like the only ones. The BMO Field, I think, is the only, and it's not soccer specific anymore, but it was built for soccer.
Yeah.
I think that's the only one on the whole list. If I'm looking at Canada had 6, Mexico 3, and US 32, that was, other than the Mexican stadiums, of course.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only U.S. or Canada stadium, I think, that was built for soccer. BC Place, CenturyLink Field, and Gillette are the other three MLS stadiums that are being considered.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something, there's just something wistful in me that the places where soccer is actually being played in North America are not on the list. Largely.
Yeah, it is interesting, which I think it sort of like circles back to the USL conversation, is that some of the best support in North American soccer right now, outside of Mexico, obviously, is in the USL.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those teams and the support that they have. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying Cincinnati should host a World Cup game, but I'd also kind of go, hey, why not? Like,
mm-hmm.
It's a town that supports soccer, and it is this, you've got all these different things going on all at once, where you have these, in some cases, very unlikely bases of support for soccer in North America that at the end of the day, I guess somebody's going to come in and exploit it and try to make some money off of it. But how that shakes out in sort of the larger picture, I guess, remains to be seen. I mean, if you say North Carolina, your first thought is not, oh, that's a big soccer town. and yet, they're vying for MLS, and they've got amazing support for their team.
True. Well, don't... you can actually maybe look at these at ticket options for 2026 because Cincinnati is on the list.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, there you
this
go.
This is an expansive list. This
okay.
Is
just well, yeah, there's 32 in the States, you said, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, I got to look at this list then because clearly I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, but it's just like every – and it's the same local story that's been the case so this was this is now the official set of bids. Earlier, the same list came out as like the bid committee itself sort of cherry picking what it thinks its best options are and seeing mm-hmm. if they are going to get support for that. Basically, I think it kind of exists at this point as sort of like a local news story to be like Regina, the Regina paper to be like, we're on the list. So is so's Birmingham, Alabama. I'm not sure that will happen, but
not if things keep going the way they're going.
Oh, geez.
You know what, Alabama? We've decided not only do you get to host a World Cup game, but where you're actually no longer part of the United States. You just
yes.
Yeah.
FedEx Field is on the list. FedEx Field's on the list. I'm shocked they decided not to host a game in RFK. This is my shock.
Yeah.
That they didn't bring choose to bring it to that August location. I think that about wraps it up for this week.
Yeah, I think we're good. And now we just have to wait out the Sunday games and see how things shake out. But there's going to be a lot to talk about and a lot of movement in both tables.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with Sig Bowl. Where can we find you online?
So I'm going to point people towards the Twitter account for this podcast, which is at ThatSoMLS. Because that's where I'm mostly talking about soccer and chirping at Seattle fans. So
amazing.
You should go follow us on Twitter there.
Yes, very good.
And Marius Rovdiv follows us now. So Minnesota's goalkeeper coach is one of our first followers, so if you want to be in on the conversation with arguably the greatest goalkeeper coach in MLS,
yes,
certainly the one with the best stories, hit us up there. Where can we find you online?
You can find me at Team Bates, www.team-bates.com, and check out Howler, whatahowler.com.
Great, cool. Okay, until next time.
Don't get sent off.
I might get sent off.
Thank you.